Hi, and thanks for joining us for this very wonderful fourth episode of Forest Dwellers Disco, where you get to join us on a trip down the complex simplicity found in the musical journey of Burringer's new creative director and CEO, Gareth Hart. I hope you enjoy. Welcome to Forest Dwellers Disco, Gareth Hart, and we're very excited that you're joining us. We hear that you'll be making your way back to the hills very soon.
Thanks, Brizzle. I'm becoming a mountain goat once again.
How exciting.
I like to call it, and I'm joining the staff team at Burringer, so thrilled to be coming back and playing in the hills.
Yeah, that would be so exciting. It must be a bit like coming home.
Not even a bit like it, it is. Actually.
It totally is. So, as you know, Forest Dwellers Disco is really just about exploring your musical journey, taking a trip down music lane together. And, so we might just kick off with the first question, which is, did you grow up in a musical family?
Not so much, I would say. Ooh. Not much of a musical family, but I do have some pretty strong musical memories of growing up, which are quite vivid in my mind. So firstly, I remember Mum playing ABC Classic FM quite a lot, and I hated it. It was so uncool to hear that in the house. little did I know that I'd grow up to kind of fall in love with classical minimalism and particularly piano music. So I'm really thankful for that now, but, I hated it at the time. My second memory is just all-night sessions watching Rage in my bedroom, which I think any child of the 80s probably did. And thirdly, most embarrassingly, but I did study oboe until I was in year 12. In year 10.
Wow.
I was very terrible at playing the oboe, but I was in the band, so I had some kind of musical moments in my childhood, in my teenage years. But we weren't overly musical.
Right. Did you do the thing with Rage where you made the mixtape videotape?
Oh, I didn't do that. Yeah, no, I didn't have – maybe we didn't have a video recorder. I can't remember. I remember recording a lot on my cassette player.
Yes.
Particularly, that's the other memory I have from being young and music, is every night they would have a top 20 and it would change every night and you would like vote on it every night. So there was this sort of excitement about listening to the radio to hear the same 20 songs just in a different order every night and trying to figure out which one was going to be number one and finish at the top.
Definitely.
And somehow that was really exciting.
That sounds like you listened to 3XY to me. That was a really long time ago. Yeah, or maybe Triple R, not Triple R. What's the Triple M is the big kind of Melbourne radio station, isn't it?
That's commercial. I was a commercial radio baby. Very much.
I think we all were, unless you had really out there parents. Yeah, there wasn't as much kind of choice, I think, growing up in the 80s, and not as much access
to find it.
Definitely.
Now you can just Google alternatives to something and find an answer to everything, whereas before you sort of had to know that there was an alternative, and if you didn't already know it or if all your friends weren't knowing of it and doing it, you just were so oblivious and naive because you had no idea that there was this whole other world of music out there that wasn't on Fox FM.
Totally. Yeah, I loved it when I discovered Gaslight Records in the city and you could actually go in and listen and then you could ask them questions, and my brothers and I would spend every Saturday there annoying the clerks. It was good. All right, so that leads us to our next question, which is, what's the first song that you went out and bought the album with your hard-earned cash?
This one is so embarrassing. It's such a bad song. The song that first inspired me to buy an album was Lover by Sonia Dada, which was an early 90s, somewhere between like a pop and an R&B kind of song. And I thought it was just so darn catchy. I still think it is. I listened to it for the first time in probably 20 years when you sent me this question, and I had a little think about it. But I actually didn't buy that Sonia Dada album I bought. It was on a compilation album called Smash Hits 93. And the mixtapes were like obviously huge in the early 90s. And it was very cool to have a mix. Well, it was a mixed CD back then, mixtape CD, just on the verge of the two. So when I was thinking about this question, that song came to mind. It was probably the first song that really kind of inspired me to go and buy an album. And like I said, I thought it was really catchy and super fun, but when I re-listened to it just yesterday, I realized that it's really sad. It's about kind of heartbreak and breaking up and falling out of love with someone. And it's kind of sad, but in this really super upbeat kind of, there's this pulse and this rhythm to the song that's really, really fun.
Yeah.
It was kind of re-listening to it, actually hearing the words. I guess that says something about the transformative nature of music, how it can kind of transform.
So interesting.
Everybody born in the 80s should go out right now and buy a copy of Smash Hits 93 because it was amazing. There were so many killer tracks on there, like Get On Ray and Ace of Base, Lenny Kravitz and Culture Beat, and just like Tony Perrin, all these bangers from the 90s.
Yes, totally. That is actually 93. I was 19. And I had moved to the Gold Coast and spent every night out in Surfers Paradise dancing to every single one of those songs.
Of the two famous Ace of Base songs, which one's your favourite?
Oh.
All That She Wants, and then there's The Sign.
I think it's All That She Wants.
Yeah, killer. Yeah.
Definitely. So onto the song that we're playing for your first track that you purchased with your own money. This is Sonia Dada with Lover, You Don't Treat Me No Good No More.
I'm gonna pack up my bag, then I'm gonna go away. I'm gonna split, I can't stand it. I'm gonna give it up and quit and ain't never coming back. But before I get to going, I got to say, I know you used to love me, but that was yesterday. And the truth, I won't fight it. When the love I'm gonna give it up and quit and ain't never coming back. But before I get to going, I got to say, I know you used to love me, but that was yesterday. And the truth, I won't fight it. When the love starts burning, you got to do what's right. But before I get to going, I got to say, there was a time, woman, when you used to shake it for me, but now
You don't treat me no good no more.
Wow, that is so smooth. You know, it's amazing that you chose this song.
I have like a deja vu that's almost like precognition, because about 4 weeks ago, I was out on the street with my dog and for no reason whatsoever started singing that song.
Oh, yes.
What? Where did that come from?
Yeah, you were precog. Amazing.
Yeah, that's fine. Well, that's my own little illusion that I'll go with. Yes. But really, like, you know, I always think it's really fascinating that these are the songs that we kind of wipe away as, you know, pop or trendy. But like I was saying to you just before, of like, took him a whole day of laying down 8 vocal tracks and the next day coming in and laying in a 9th track of the bass track to get the texture of that song and for it to have that kind of resonance. It's very, very cool. Very, very cool. Yes, and I think it was that song that everybody knew the words to, and it was just on every radio station everywhere all the time, so I can see spending money on it. Awesome. All right, so the next song is a song from your teenage years that became your rebellion song or your light bulb song or just like your teenage anthem, really.
So I've taken a slightly liberal view of this question, and I couldn't pick one song. I found it too hard. So I've sent you a song, but I actually think I'm going with an album as my teenage anthem.
Okay.
And the early 90s was when I first discovered an artist by the name of Björk, and a song called It's Oh So Quiet, which many people probably know. Yeah, it was probably Björk's biggest sort of hit. Ironically, it was one of the only tracks she's never written herself. It was written for her. As a song that needed a bit of popularity because she was sort of on a journey. Anyway, I heard that song, and from there I listened to the whole album that's from, which is called Post, and my entire perspective on music changed in pretty much a single moment from listening to that album. It's kind of furious but also full of love, and it's super sharp-edged. It's sort of quite unpleasant in parts, and it also talks or demonstrates some emotional landscapes that my, you know, 14-year-old self had no idea even existed at the time. Really that whole album I think is my teenage anthem. There are just so many epic tracks on that album. I've listened to it 4 times in the last 24 hours. Songs like Enjoy and Army of Me and Isabel, possibly maybe just. Albums
I'm going to play your whole album because that is like one of my top 20 albums, actually. I was very blessed to see Björk at the Big Day Out.
In Melbourne?
On the Gold Coast. So there's a little part of my history where I lived in Queensland. I snuck in to the Big Day Out
in the back of a truck,
as you do. And, where my boyfriend was playing, his tent was right next to her stage. So I literally turned around from his performance and then turned there, and there she was. And I was like, oh, my God, this is amazing.
So that was the Vault Tour, wasn't it?
That was debut.
Oh, early Big Day Out.
It was fantastic. But, I kind of fell in love with her there. So when Post came out, I was just like, oh, this is amazing.
It absolutely blew my mind. I was living in Amsterdam. I didn't know her during the debut tour, like Post came after debut, so obviously from the chronology. So like which makes, you know, dramatic
post
sense.
Post debut, yes.
I just missed it. She didn't tour for like 15 years in Australia. I only came back when Volta got released, like mid-2000s-ish or somewhere, maybe late 2000s. Yeah, late 2000s, I think. I was living in Amsterdam at the time, and she announced the tour. I literally moved back to Australia just to see her in Melbourne because I was like, I've been waiting for Björk to come to my hometown for you know, most of my adult life. So, yeah, and then I sort of chased her to like gig after gig. I couldn't get enough.
That's awesome.
And off that album, I've chosen a song for you called Hyper Ballad, which is maybe one of the more digestible songs on the album. But I sort of thought I don't think this is the intention of the artist at all, but as I was re-listening to that song or that whole album, that song really sung out to me because it's sort of this metaphor of this beautifully violent ride of awakening. And I thought, I heard one of the lines that said, I have to sing it in my head to hear it. Imagine what my body would sound like slamming against those rocks, and when I land, will my eyes be closed or open? And as I was hearing that yesterday walking, I thought, like, what a better metaphor for teenage life. Like, it's kind of violent and you kind of get smashed around a fair bit because everything's going on in your body and your mind and in the spirit and in the world, and everything's changing. And then you just never know how you're going to wake up from that and in what state you'll be.
So I
chose Hyper Ballad as the song, but the whole album is my teenage anthem.
Love that you have to put that in. Yes, look, it's hard to go past Army of Me.
But I was going to do that, but I thought, like, I can't do that considering I'm coming back into a leadership job. Like, that's so ego-driven. I can't go with Army of Me.
You will face it. Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. You could have owned it. all right. So this is Björk with Hyper Ballad.
I go through all this before.
What I found most amazing re-listening to the album, I had headphones on and I didn't have headphones as a kid. And you can hear so much more than what I remember of the song, because in like good Sennheiser headphones, you just hear every single note. It was amazing.
Yeah, definitely.
For me,
what was amazing about the experience of listening to headphones and walking around was that way in which it sort of transports you into this sense of like you're walking above the pavement.
Mm.
Yeah, because her music sort of lifts you up even when it's full on. It's sort of, it's always taking your feet off the ground.
Yeah.
And so, yeah.
It fully, it kind of abducts you every time. It pulls you somewhere else.
Oh, I'm glad you relate, because that's what it does for me. I'm like, now I'm over there now. Yeah. Amazing.
It was like peak Björk time. It goes post and then Vespertine and then Medulla.
Yeah.
Like those three albums as a triptych are just redefined music, I think, in a global kind of sense.
Yeah.
Which was really like on point.
Yeah, definitely. And interesting as an artist in that the way that she really I think in post really meshed together that punk element that had come from the Sugar Cubes with that pop element, and then her very experimental self started to emerge. And I think that's what is so exciting about post is that.
Yeah.
That you're starting
to see her. A real moment of transition.
Yeah, definitely.
Debut's still got a little bit of that kind of raw, pseudo unproduced Sugar Cubes feel about it, some of the songs on debut.
Yes. Yeah.
Some of them are very kind of very well produced, but some of them just have that kind of raw edge to them. Which listen to the Sugar Cubes, you're like, oh, did you even have a producer? Did anybody mix this? It's so rough.
No, we just made it in the back garden. That's awesome. All right. So on to our next question, which is, what is the song that transports you back to a happy time, a revelatory time, an amazing time in your life?
So I've this one might be a little bit of a curveball in the oral journey we've had so far, Blues, but I've picked a Philip Glass track, which is off an album called Glassworks, and it's the fourth song on that. It's called Rubric. Philip Glass is a real is sort of a bit of a musical icon, particularly in the contemporary dance world. There aren't many contemporary composers that have the profile that Philip Glass does in the dance world. Like, we often talk about choreographers and dancers and their kind of stature, but Philip Glass is very well known, mainly because his music works in polyrhythms. It's an excellent kind of training music, and it's in contemporary ballet classes you hear a lot of Philip Glass music as opposed to the traditional piano music. So this particular album I discovered when I was at the VCA doing my master's, and at the time the VCA had a really, really strong CD library, like a music library, and I'd never really heard much Philip Glass before. So for the whole 3 years I was there, I basically borrowed a new Philip Glass album every week for a couple of years and just really dove into that, and I really fell in love with this album in particular and one of his opera pieces. But there's something so profoundly complex about the simplicity that he plays with that I just really just really resonated with me.
I similar era, but my introduction to Philip Glass was through cinema and through Baraka. And that's how I kind of came to him, and then I had discovered Glassworks, which is what we're playing your next track from, through that. But it's a similar response to that kind of the simplicity and the way in which the music wraps you up and takes you on a journey. It's very beautiful, very, very beautiful.
Against all of the better judgments, I actually when I was trying to find that particular track, I'd stumbled across the full album on YouTube. And if anybody's looking to just have their heart melted, they should go and Google Philip Glass Glassworks Complete and find the YouTube video. Just read the comments from people, because people are sharing these literally these life-changing moments that they've heard the music for the first time on YouTube and have just said the most profound things, far more insightful than any art critic I've ever heard. Yeah, I never read the comments, but I'm really glad I did on that one yesterday.
Wow, right now I want to Google them. That's so funny. Oh, dear. All right, well, so let's have a listen to this beautiful track. So this is Philip Glass, Glassworks number 4, Rubric.
there's something about this track that is just, it's so embodied for me. Like, it's just kind of pulsates inside my chest. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And that, yeah, just that kind of, I don't know. For me, it's, maybe it's because that's how I know Philip Glass, but it's always very cinematic for me. Whenever I see it, it's always there's always visuals, always takes me out on a really kind of rapid kind of movement.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like strangely, or it's almost like his music doesn't allow you to breathe. So at the end of it, there's just this sort of giant exhalation. At the end of his track, there's not in a negative way. They just capture your emotions so. Holy.
Very beautiful. Very, very beautiful. And, you know, I mean, he definitely is probably one of the most well-known composers of our age. And this album is the one that everyone kind of raves about as well. So I have in my mind that I'm going to go and read those comments, and I'll read some out at the end for people. Get inspired. All right, on to our next question, which is so imagine you're in isolation and the NBN has chapter wobbly and you're reduced to basically dial up speed, and now you're going to listen to one song. What would it be and why?
So the track I've decided to share with you is a track of the soon-to-be-released debut album by my partner, Edward Willoughby. This album's been in development for, since we met, so over 10 or 11 years now. And given that Edward is a pianist with a sort of disdain for any electronic keyboards, I've sort of heard the songs of this album played almost daily on a pretty gorgeous antique German piano that Edward owns. So when this question came to me, I sort of thought the metaphoric NBN kind of cut out or wobbly or whatnot has kind of been in my life for 10 years already with this music, because I've heard it so much. I must have heard it thousands of times, all of these tracks. So I can kind of resolutely say that I'll never get sick of this music. This music, every time I hear it, it's like hearing it for the first time. It's so intricate and so detailed and just so beautiful. And I never get sick of hearing these songs, the same 10 songs that I've heard for 10 years. So, I sort of could answer this question with some assurity, because I'm sure that I'd be happy to listen to this one track for the rest of my life.
Wow. And what is about, so there's 10 tracks for the album, but what is it about Eye of the Storm particularly that you, why did you choose this one above the other 9?
I also found it really, really hard. I asked Edward for a recording, and I think I sent a short list of 5 songs or 4 or 5 songs and nearly half the album. I was like, I'll take any of these. They're all amazing. but there's something about this one that is, it's very dynamic. It's very dramatic. It has the range of flavor in the song is really quite incredible. It draws you right into the smallest detail, and then it kind of blows you away with its complexity at the same time, or you know, one after the other.
I think they were kind of experiencing within themselves that underlies this song, or is that something that you're allowed to share?
I won't share.
So okay.
Just because there's a potential that the album will be released as a piano-only album, and there's a chance it's released with vocals. There are vocals that go with these songs. So I won't give away any of the narrative or the words. I also think that one of the most amazing things about Edward's music is that it's so imaginative. So to sort of put a narrative into it, or to tell you, to disclose what it's about, it makes it a bit singular. Whereas I just think they're so expansive, and they just speak of this sort of curiosity and an expansive mind and a really, really unique prism through which I think Edward sees the world, that I would hate to, dilute what they were meaning by the song. I'd hate to dilute that down into sort of this is what it is about.
Okay. I won't press that point. That's okay. All right. So this is Eye of the Storm, soon to be released by Edward Willoughby.
So this is a recording from the grand piano version, which is pretty nice to share with the world.
Is that from Bunjil Place?
Cardinia Cultural Centre.
Cardinia Cultural Centre. Yeah. Ah, beautiful. Yeah. So when does Edward release? Do you know? Do you have a release date for that?
There's no release date as yet, but it's inches closer and closer.
Fantastic. So, that's so
it's just about getting the right recording. Edward's been exploring home recording in their home studio, bought some microphones and doing soundproofing, but it looks like maybe the studio is too small and it needs a much bigger space so the sound can kind of reverberate properly for the
fantastic.
Yeah, for the fullness of the experience. So we're just trying to explore how to do that when we don't have a church.
Yes, yeah, it's an interesting thing, isn't it, when you want to get that sound to get that. And none of the digital versions of that are really quite the same. Yeah,
no,
yes.
No.
Yeah. There's nothing quite like the resonance of a church. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, that is an amazing journey. I find it really interesting that you kind of, even when you thought you were choosing a really poppy song, you actually chose something that was quite complex. But seemingly, and that's sort of a theme across everything. Every choice that you've made is this simplicity that masks a great deal of detail and musical skill and talent.
Yeah. That's interesting. Because I decided on them and I said, I'm not going to change it. I've decided that's done. And then I looked back and I thought, oh, I think what I'm interested in is that complex emotional landscape. I think they all probably talk about that a little bit. But that's interesting that that you've picked up on, yeah, this sort of relationship between complexity and simplicity, that kind of balance of that. Cool.
Yeah. That's very cool. Yeah. Yes, definitely. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us. It's been a pleasure having you on Forest Dwellers Disco. And you can go and find the tracks on Spotify. And I'll add the link to the YouTube so you can go read all of the comments. Okay. And thank you.
Thanks, Blues. All great to chat.
Thanks again for listening, and don't forget to subscribe. More episodes coming up very soon.